Talk of constitutional reform seems far removed from what's happening in Libya. There was heavy fighting today in several cities there. Witnesses say many people were killed in Zawiya when government forces attempted to recapture the city. The crisis in Libya poses a dilemma for the international community, whether or not to intervene militarily inside the country. The world's Jeb Sharp examines the options.
The revolutions in Tunisia and Egypt were relatively peaceful, but the uprising in Libya has quickly turned into civil war. Muammar Gaddafi has shown in word and deed that he will target civilians who oppose him.
We can't just sit on the sideline if this continues to escalate to huge atrocities against the Libyan people.
That's Bruce Jennelson, professor at Duke University and until very recently a senior advisor in the Obama State Department.
Yet we also know that the choices we have, none of them are guaranteed to work, and all of them have lots of really difficult elements.
The choice that's been most bandied about so far is a no-fly zone. British leader David Cameron has called for one. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has acknowledged the idea is under consideration. But Defense Secretary Robert Gates says there should be no illusions about what a no-fly zone actually means.
A no-fly zone begins with an attack on Libya to destroy the air defenses. That's the way you do a no-fly zone. And then you can fly planes around the country and not worry about our guys being shot down. But that's the way it starts. But it also requires more airplanes than you would find on a single aircraft carrier. So it is a big operation in a big country.
And Gates has made it clear he's in no mood for new military adventures while he's still got his hands full with Iraq and Afghanistan. But there's considerable pressure building for some sort of intervention. The opposition in Libya is specifically calling for a no-fly zone. Michael Knights of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy has studied the merits of no-fly zones.
No-fly zones are the option that the international community naturally grabs for at moments like this. They were very successful, for instance, in protecting the Kurdish enclave in northern Iraq during a similar humanitarian crisis at the end of the 91 Gulf War. A small state came out of that experience of protecting with a no-fly zone. However, that's one of the downsides of no-fly zones. Sometimes they can be in place for a very long time. They're easy to start but very hard to end, and they're very resource intensive.
Knight says there are other options, though. The U.S., for instance, could bomb Gaddafi's runways and air defenses without necessarily committing to long-term patrols over Libyan airspace.
And as long as the U.S. got a U.N. resolution backing the no-fly zones that was time-limited, then the U.S. would not be stuck in some open-ended policing operation that, as in the case of Iraq, lasted a decade.
A UN resolution would seem to be key to any U.S. intervention, given the troubled legacy of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. President Obama has signaled he doesn't want to do anything unilaterally, but any U.S. participation at all carries risks, given the strength of anti-American sentiment in the region. As Knights points out, if the U.S. provides military support but fails to overthrow Gaddafi, then the U.S. might feel responsible for protecting the opposition indefinitely. You also don't want to raise hopes and then dash them, as the first Bush administration did in Iraq.
After the 1991 uprising in Iraq, where the rebels almost toppled Saddam, but then failed and were severely repressed, that left a lasting legacy of resentment against the U.S. that has played into the insurgency we've seen since 2003. People in southern Iraq never forgot the fact that the U.S. encouraged them to rise up and then did not support them.
In the years since, the international community has grappled with its failure to stop mass killing in Bosnia, Rwanda, and the Darfur region of Sudan. In 2005, the UN General Assembly endorsed an evolving principle known as the responsibility to protect. The idea is that the international community should intervene however it can when a government sets about slaughtering its own people. Former Libyan Foreign Ministry official Murad Hamema has just defected. He invoked the principle in an interview with the BBC.
The international community has a duty to protect. We don't want another Rwanda on our hands.
Rwanda looms large in Bruce Jennelson's mind as well.
If this continues to escalate and the international community does not act and you have a genuine instance of crimes against humanity, if we don't act in that situation, you know, the thing that really resonates with me is the question of when will we act?
For now, though, any overt military assistance from outside seems a long way off. The hope is that the Libyan people will manage to bring Gaddafi down by themselves. For the World, I'm Jeb Sharp.